Hey, kids, this is Mark Arm from Mudhoney.
This is Nicole Alvarez from the world-famous K-Rock.
Hey, I'm James Joseph from James and the Cold Gun.
Hey, I'm Zozier.
Hey, this is Jeremy Toback from the band Brad.
Hi, I am Matt Vaughn from Easy Street Records.
This is Josh Evans.
This is Charles Peterson.
And this is the State of Love and Trust.
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 A Pearl Jam podcast.
Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. Feed the algorithm.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of The State of Love and Trust. It's a Pearl Jam podcast, and I'm one of your two hosts, Jason Carapesi, and alongside me, as always, is...
Paul Gillieri.
Paul, I want to welcome anybody who is new to the program. If you're listening or if you're watching, hello, welcome. Yes, we exist. We've been here for a little while, but welcome nonetheless.
We are happy to have you join us tonight, because we are going deep... Oh. Deep on side A of Dark Matter.
We are. Before we get into, this is going to be the side A of Dark Matter, as Paul said, the review. Side B will be next week, so be on the lookout for that. And then obviously we'll have our composite grade at the very end of that episode. Before we get into today's review, I want to get a little news and notes out of the way. For those of you who are new, I am Jason Carapesi. I'm one of your hosts. That is Paul Gillieri, one of your hosts. We've been doing this thing for about 4 years now.
4 years.
A labor of love, Paul.
Has it been that long?
It has been that long.
Time flies when you are enjoying Pearl Jam.
If you are just finding us, there is a hell of a back catalog for you to enjoy. Lots of interviews, lots of ridiculous topics where we just dive through this catalog. And most of it, almost all of it, is evergreen. So have a ball. Comment. Tell us what you think, and welcome to the community. We're happy to have you here. We're just happy to be a part of it. So,
absolutely.
With that said, a few news notes. You know, we do have a little bit of a contest up right now in regards to podcast reviews. Paul's always saying you got to feed that algorithm. Well, you know what? We're anteing up. We're giving a reward here, Paul, and we are giving away. If I can pull, I have so many props here, Paul. We are giving away the Mojo magazine. We're giving away a Dark Matter slip mat for your record player at home and a Dark Matter in stores now poster for two people.
The holidays come early.
In May. Who knew? Or April. I guess it's April. So if you send in a review, if you write a review for Apple Podcasts, I don't think Spotify does reviews yet. So sorry. I'm not sure. Send in a review, and we're going to pick two of them very, very soon, and those people will get those items for free.
Do it. Feed that algorithm. It's April showers. It's raining Pearl Jam. Let's do this.
And very soon, it'll be raining Pearl Jam in the real world for you guys to go see.
Oh, boy.
We also have some amazing guests coming down the pike. We've got... Loose Groove Records artist Johnny Polonsky. We've got graphic artist and former Ames brother Ward Sutton will be on the show.
Yep.
And a guy you may know, a drummer named Dave Crewson, will be joining us. Clutch the pearls. Yes, it's happening. Oh, and by the way, we're going to see you at Ohana Festival. Sunday.
Will.
Paul and I will both be there. So check us out. I'm going to be popping by on Saturday and Friday as well. If you're there, we might try and do something. We don't know. Working through the motions, Paul.
It's in the works. We got a few months on that one.
We do have a few months. What's a little bit closer are the two shows here in Los Angeles at the LA, I guess
that's
it's the
right.
LA Forum anymore. It's the Kia Forum.
Kia Forum.
Yeah. Give Kia their due, right? They paid enough money for it.
Hey, naming rights deserve... No, they whatever.
Well,
it's the LA Forum.
It's the LA
Moving
Forum.
On.
Let's be honest.
Moving
the
on.
Great Western Forum, if you will, exactly. For anybody who's local. So we're going to be there doing a live podcast probably on night 2. So that'd be May 22nd, but stay tuned for details on that.
Yep.
There you go. If you are interested in supporting the show a little bit more, we do sell t-shirts. We have three designs. They're on the screen right now. Get in the DMs and we will talk to you about how to procure one of those bad boys. We also have Patreon where we have extra content, bonus interviews, bonus video content with photographers and artists, including a bi-monthly chat with Brad Clausen on how he makes his posters. And we are giving away, we give away stuff every month. This month though, Paul, again, so many props here. And I know we're doing so many news and notes, but this is important because we've got the real deal, the full thing. Look at this, Paul.
Oh boy. Is that what I think it is?
Oh, it is. That is a crystal clear variant of the Dark Matter vinyl. This exact one could be yours.
I have to be honest with you. Like, first of all, I think the best one is the 10 Club variant. That marble red, gorgeous. Mm-hmm. I was a big fan of the crystal clear one. Regionally speaking, I'm not totally on board with all the other ones.
They are very particular.
Very, very particular.
I do kind of like the record store day one, that yellow and black kind of.
What was the one that looked like almost like rusty clouds or something bubbling up? I forget what was that, Philly?
Record store day one. Yeah.
It was a record store. Okay. So that I could get behind. The other ones, I don't know. I think I would just go with classic black vinyl at that point.
Hey, Matt, if it's good enough for Matt Vaughn, it's good enough for me, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So if you were interested in getting that vinyl, this vinyl for free, Patreon giveaway for April. You have a few days left to get on board with that. Mm-hmm. If not, no big deal. You could very well just go ahead and like and subscribe to this video in the channel. Hit the bell icon for notifications. Helps more fans find this content. And if you're old school, listening on your preferred podcast platform of choice, Paul, what are they doing?
You're stealing my lines now?
I know, sorry.
Rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast platform of choice. Feed that algorithm. And it's going to rain Pearl Jam for you.
Fantastic. Okay. Yeah. That's a long preamble, Paul, but you know, we had to reestablish ourselves to the newbies.
It's like an intro into Scared of Fear. You know,
the master of segues has done it again. I got to say here at the outset that intro, that 2024 version of Master Slave, if you will. I find it lovely. Right into Sean Penn breaking the billiards, you know? It's a fun homage. And I have to thank Andrew Watt for doing that. Because it has to be his idea, right?
I imagine that it was.
Yeah. Well, the way that we do these reviews, this is actually only the third one we've done because we've only had Gigaton. And then we did one for Earthling. And we basically do a analysis. We opine. We give our thoughts, and then we score at the end, 0 to 5, just as we did for those previous records. And that'll be that. And we'll do side A today. So that's Scared of Fear Through Won't Tell. And then we'll flip the disc over next week and complete the record. So with that out of the way, let's get to it. Paul, I think we should like flip it where one of us starts first each side. So what would you like to do? Start this round or start side B?
I don't know. That's a very good I guess I'll start. I'll just go. How about that?
Okay. Go.
I'll just go.
If you will. Here it is. The opening track is Scared of Fear.
Scared of Fear. You know, you referenced that intro, that cryptic, hypnotic intro. And it, for me, you listen to that billiard break, it cuts out with just this whip, you know what I mean? And it's that cracking sound that pulls you out of what had been this descent into dark matter. I mean, you really feel like you're being enveloped by the album cover as you listen to that. And quite frankly, I was entranced. And I didn't want to leave that space. So I love that crack because it's jarring. And there's that infectious sound at the beginning that you kind of want to stay in that space for a while. And so to kind of get ripped out of it or snapped out of it, if you will, was such an effective sound technique. So what is this song really doing here? It's this introspective look at the damage that fear really causes to a relationship. In a lot of ways, it's a microcosm, I think, for society, or maybe on a macro level of a generation. So that intro to me feels like we're being taken on this trip before we get whipped into this frenzied scene. And I want to highlight that word scene. Okay. So just put a pin in that one for a second. So for me, I kind of want to look at some standout lines that I think help frame this track. We all like control. I surrender to you, dear. That absence of control is really what I think causes fear. And it's capitulating, I think, to the acceptance. That's ultimately the only way that you're really going to find release in it, that the peace that comes with it. You know, we can't really sweat the things we can't control. It's easier said than done, but that ultimately that's a life lesson that I don't think most of us ever learn, despite our acute awareness of it. I'm going to reference another line here. So I think you're hurting yourself just to hurt me. That loss of control, I think that creates a feeling of anxiety in all of us. And that comes from being in this perpetual state of vulnerability. So the frustration really can only be directed at the unwavering abstract for so long before it inevitably gets redirected at the people that we love the most, because they're there. We know they're going to be there. And there's this feeling of impunity that comes with the belief that they will always be there. And we take that for granted. And that's why the people that we love the most are the ones who are on the receiving end of those sharp, sharp jabs. We used to laugh. We used to sing. We used to dance. We had our own scene. I love this line. I think it's very underrated. It's really hard for me not to reminisce back to a time where things were simpler, when there was a lot more of a like proverbial pavement ahead for us in our youth, stretching beyond the horizon for this seemingly endless stretch of miles. It's the calculus that changes when you start feeling that that road is actually closer to the end than it was at the beginning. And when you hit that point in life, you know, or in a relationship, that original scene for me, when I think about it, is that Seattle in the 90s? Is that the scene? It suffered so much loss. When you think about the prominent figures of that time that we have lost, you know, the dearly departed, if you will, it's easy to wonder if this isn't some kind of new anthem for a new generation looking into the rear view. Mike's solo, it has that ripping 80s vibe to it. You know, it's complete with the dramatic tail off before it starts spiraling back up again with the bridge, and the song is working furiously to a crescendo that ends with that repeated refrain before that final lamenting cry, "We used to believe." And so for me, it's this trip down memory lane, and it's commentary in a lot of ways, this song, from the last one standing, because that's what Pearl Jam are. They're the last one standing on what it feels like to still be walking that long road when so many dear loved ones have departed, and the torment that comes with hearing the voices calling all around my head, "I've lost my friend." You know, I mean, it's not hard to recognize what that could be in reference to, and the desire for those voices to stop for just a moment so we can return back to that scene again. In a lot of ways, I feel like "If Comes Then Goes" off Gigaton is what the stages of grief sound like alone in a room with an audience of one. This song, "Scared of Fear," is what those stages sound like when you plug those feelings into an amp and you blow the roof off everybody, including those dear to us beyond the plane, can hear. For me, that's really what the song is about.
I like it. That has been floated in early entries when people started hearing this song, the Jonathan Cohns of the world, and anybody who heard the album well before it came out, who was kind of like, you know, dropping breadcrumbs of what these songs could be about, people were mentioning, yep. is it the Seattle scene that he's referring to? Interesting. We have a number grade. What do you think?
So we're going to score these on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being not necessarily worth a revisit very often at all, really. being gentle. A 2 would be a song that you let play for the sake of letting it play as part of a larger album experience, but it's not necessarily a song that you seek out. I think a 3 is what we would regard as, it's a good song. You know what I mean? It's a good song. A 4 would be a really good song. It's a song that you look forward to. 5 is that rarefied air. 5 for me is, you know, this is in my top 10. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All time catalog. So I think for a song like this, it's growing on me more and more with every listen. And I think it gets me thinking. There's a level of introspection that we oftentimes don't hear with this type of song composition from the band. I feel like, you know, songs like Got Some and Gonna See My Friend, they all kind of, they inhabit a similar bucket, if you will. This song, I think, takes this to an entirely new level. So I'm going to give it a 4 because I think it is a good song, but it takes it up a notch for me. So I wouldn't put it okay. into my top 10, but I mean, I think it's a hell of a song.
Top 10 is, I mean, that's an aggressive move. And we'll see if any of these tracks find that tier.
Do you agree with that though? Is that a 5 for you, or is it, am I being too restrictive?
When you think of a 5, you think of like, it's gotta be on the level of a Black or a Corduroy like or a Given the Fly. Like it's gotta be like, I don't know maybe what that could be possibly wrong.
A top 12, I don't know, top 25. I mean, even
yeah,
there.
It,
I mean,
it's that's, just, it's a top tier song, and there's basically nothing that you don't like about it, kind of thing.
Exactly.
And then if there's like, yo, that one thing kind of bugs me, but the rest of it's fantastic, then you're like at a 4.5 or whatever you want to, however you want to call it.
Good call.
Okay. So for me, you know, I'm a music guy first. I love me the music first, and then I think about the lyrics afterwards. Mm-hmm. That's how a lot of these reviews are gonna pan out for me, because I listened to the song. I mean, I've been listening for over a week, as you have, multiple times. I've read the lyrics multiple times, but when I really dialed in for this review, I listened basically once, music only, kind of trying to hear what everybody was doing, and then again, solely focusing on the lyrics. What's Ed doing? You know, what's he trying to communicate? So, what an opening riff. Central, right down the middle of the, right down the barrel of the gun, and then it's split left as Mike joins. You know, I love Matt's entry, that guitar, you know, and then right into this really groovy sort of up-tempo beat. Mike seems to be playing something similar to Stone, but it's played just differently enough that it differentiates itself a little bit. It fills the song out, creating like a proper stereo effect, a wall of guitars, if you will. You kind of get the same thing in the main riff of Do the Evolution and probably a lot more songs. So go back and listen to that if you want to know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Now, as far as chorus progressions go, up and then down, it's a roller coaster. And I love a Runaway Train style groove, and we've got it here. And Ed's
that's a great analogy.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Everything about this song is Runaway Train. That's like the perfect metaphor for
exactly.
this
song. And Ed singing absolutely helps achieve this effect. It's a very fun, classic Mike solo, and it leads us right into a beautiful halftime bridge. You've got like a picking pattern thing from Stone, some synths, maybe some reverb. It's very Garden-esque in a lot of ways, but then you start picking up some steam, you know, Mike soloing under Ed. It's a great use of dynamics with this bridge. I mean, let everyone breathe for just a moment. Ed's got his lyrics there repeating like a mantra, hear the voices calling all around my head. And not to mention Matt ratcheting up the tension as he plays more and more complex fills the closer we get to the last chorus. You know, there's a lot of punk elements here. They're pushing you and pulling you through the song. But man, how about the outro drum fills? I mean, for Matt, are fantastic. And it's something that we'll see him bring back later in Running. Mm-hmm. Now, lyrically, this is a very intriguing song because it's like the first time someone notices that their partner may not love them anymore. This is how I took it.
Okay.
But more than that, they're gripping. Like they don't want to lose their partner. We all like control. I surrender to you, my dear. You referenced this yourself. Now, is it a bit desperate? Has the other person already made up their mind? Now, after Ed alludes to the final track here, asking if they're the setting sun, I find that very interesting, a little allusion there. Another sign of desperation, though, in a relationship is I think people get nostalgic. They focus on the good times that they used to have when there's nothing good to focus on now, kind of thing. And that's what Ed's doing in this chorus for me. Now, there's an accusation of the subject's partner hurting themselves to get back at them. Mm-hmm. But is that just biased perspective? Perhaps the partner really isn't hurting themselves. That's just what the subject thinks. And by the way, interesting that the only vocal layering on these is on the lines, we used to laugh, we used to sing. Two things that the subject and the partner could only do with their voices. Everything else is just singular Ed. Now, here in the second verse, you've got more evidence that the subject is probably at fault for the demise of the relationship. Maybe they've gotten too comfortable, maybe showcased parts of themselves that aren't very flattering, parts their partner didn't think were there. I think a lot of us have been there at some point. And by the end of the bridge, we realize that the partner is gone and all the subject can do is be remorseful. Monday morning quarterbacking, if you will. I'm going to be haunted by this, that kind of thing. So it's a pretty dour scene here, but something that Ed has done masterfully throughout the years. And people in our Discord have talked about this song a lot recently. And it was played on Howard Stern earlier this week, or earlier last week, I should say. And I got to say, it has become an earworm. It really has become an earworm. And I've been struggling to find things that don't impress me about it. So maybe it's a bit gung-ho. Maybe it's too new. Maybe I need more weeks with it. But right now, Paul, 4.5.
Wow, you went there.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm loving it.
Okay.
I'm loving it.
All right.
So go ahead, please.
I mean, it's... I'm not going to argue with you. I think it's a heck of an opening. Talk about setting the tempo for the record, you know?
I mean,
for a song to get us thinking as much as this one does, and to come out of the gates as hot as it does, I think it's just a great, great placement as well. Like, if we were to retract this, which we will one day, compelling
yes.
argument, it's as compelling argument that, you know, there might not be a better track to open. I don't know.
From there, we go into another rocker, React, Respond.
Well, you know, this one is unique to me because when I listen to this song, I get shades of the Chili Peppers meets Devo. I don't know why. It's just the vocal delivery, the song composition, the effects that are produced. It just sounds like the Chili Peppers meets Devo. It's this new wave dance rock song and this call to action in the spirit of what feels like Worldwide Suicide. You know, there's this fuzzy ripping solo from Mike with this devious cackle from Ed and that ominous warning, don't react, respond. There's no use as directed. The best part I know was when we were connected. I think about those lines and it's like, all right, what does that mean? You know, don't react. Why? Because the outrage and the shouting and the protest on social media, that's just a reaction. It's not tangible. You know what I mean? We're just shouting into an echo chamber. A response is what action looks like. And Pearl Jam, I think, has always, they've always been the advocates and the mascots, ambassadors of what the embodiment of the activist spirit looks like for a rock band. And they've also modeled what that outrage to social and personal injustice looks like in action. Now, sometimes they fail short, right? We saw that with Ticketmaster. But they've also affected more change than most of us will ever in our lifetime. So when I listen to this song, Embrace the Unexpected, that line continues to reverberate for me because it underscores the idea that so much of this record is really about letting go of our need for control. And I think that's kind of this pervasive theme throughout the record. When you think about what dark matter is, you know, I think that there's some of that as well. So in some ways, I'm also drawing parallels to Yield, which I'll get to later. But for right now, I think it's a strong track. I wouldn't put it on the same level necessarily as Scared of Fear. I gave it a 3. I think it's a good song. It's one that I will enjoy when I listen to, but I don't necessarily go out of my way to seek it out. But it's also not one that I just let play for the sake of letting play. Like when it comes on, like I can get into it, you know, but it's not one that, you know, that I'm seeking out per se.
Okay. No, friend of the show, Ryan Lent, did a lovely breakdown of this tune recently on his YouTube channel. And it's really quite simple, but the way that Stone, Jeff, and Mike bounce off each other is subtle yet sublime.
Well,
this whole intro verse riffage is all about Jeff. He's got a distorted bass line, he's bouncing around, and even though it's not on a 12 string, it's bouncing for me like Why Go.
Okay.
The pre-chorus though is gorgeous. You know, while Jeff is kind of carrying on.
I love that.
Right?
Best part of the song.
You can probably hear it. Mike is doing this awesome, like, muted arpeggio thing that moves.
Yeah, exactly.
Moves slowly up the neck, creating more tension, and it brings you to this elevated chorus. And of course, Ed's layered ooze in that pre-chorus really helps suspend the listener above the dancing instruments below.
It's the chorus itself kind of loses me. I'm not a big fan of the chorus. The pre-chorus is gorgeous, but the react respond part, I'm don't react, respond.
All right.
It doesn't hit me.
Well, to your point about the pre-chorus, it's almost like you're on a zip line over this beautiful thorny valley, right? The thing is, where do you go from there? And I think the brilliant thing about the chorus that I really like is Matt. And I don't know that I've heard him play the hi-hat like that ever in a Pearl Jam song before. It's kind of strokes adjacent, that, you know?
Yeah.
It's I really enjoy that. I know that the lyrics are pretty basic, but I think that's Ed's intent. And I don't mind that. Now, for the second portion of, I want to say it's the second verse here, Ed goes full, I'm going to borrow a phrase from a friend of the show, Zosher. He goes full srap, sing rap. And it's very much kind of what he does in Whoever Said, that thing he does.
Yeah.
I don't think that I would have ever liked that as a younger Pearl Jam fan, but it's really connecting with me on this song. It kind of fits the groove well, so I'm down with it. Now, the bridge, it opens up really dynamically, much like Scared of Fear, but it doesn't go halftime. Even though it kind of feels like it does, Matt just changes his beat. It's not halftime. And there's a real subtle muted arpeggio thing, again, kind of happening underneath the whole big note chords the guys are playing on guitar. Whole note chords, I should say. The brown. Now, I'm not sure if Josh will play this live or Mike, but we'll see. But I really like it. And the chords in the chorus, they only move one foot away from each other before they kind of drop down to the E, which is miles away. So again, lots of tension being built in the chorus, musically speaking. Then you have Mike ripping possibly the best solo on the record, at least on this side of the record, in my opinion. Ooh. And there's some really cool panning happening there in his solo, some kind of classic studio magic dust, you know, the fun little trick, that little pan thing. Now, I know Ed walked back his Trump comments about Wreckage, our next song, but I can't help think that he's maybe the subject here, projecting to what's actually about to happen in real life as we record this. Trump will be on a stand in a courtroom fairly soon.
He will be, yeah.
But again, this could be about anybody that's committed crimes or done things to anger and upset a large group of people.
Yeah.
But Ed is steadfast. You know, he's got you thinking, you got to be mindful, man. You got to be surgical. You got to be wise. You know, you can't just have knee-jerk emotional reactions because that's all anyone will notice, as you said. It's kind of like... it's kind of like in sports. The guy who commits the penalty, he's not getting in trouble. It's the player who retaliates who gets in trouble. So don't just knee-jerk react. You've got to be composed and have the right response, as you said. And I like how Ed kind of turns the focus away from the person who is dividing us in the first verse to us in the second verse, you know, implying that we have the power to make this person irrelevant. We can come together to find common ground and solutions. How about this line here? And I think you said it actually. There's no book on this life. There's no users directed. The best part I know was when we were connected. It's just, it's so good. The no use as directed line. There's no script. There's no instructions to life. But as long as we learn from our mistakes and have some empathy, we're going to be okay. And it's a positive thought considering the negative ending of the opening track. Also, the way Ed sings the chorus that last time around, kind of atonal in spots. At first, I didn't really like it. And maybe that's why it's not really striking a chord with you. But it felt, the more I listened to it, it felt kind of punk rock, maybe a little Talking Heads or something. Like, okay, maybe it's like an interesting way to illustrate how precarious all of this is. So I'm going to roll with that.
It's got a punk rock vibe.
Yeah. And I don't think it's as strong as Scared of Fear. But the first few listens, this song grabbed me. It really grabbed me. And I think it's because of that Matt hi-hat thing in the chorus. And even though Ed's lyrics there are pretty repetitive, you know, it's a 2-1 or it's an AABA. So I get that that might be a bit of a down vote, but my God, the rest of it, I really, really enjoy as a rock song. It's up-tempo and it's got a bouncy groove. And again, I'm music first. And so for me, it's a 4.
Yeah, I couldn't go there. I mean, I agree with all of that. I just think that if the chorus is arguably the weakest part of the song, that's hard. Cause that's the part that's got to grab you, you know? So that's kind of where I landed with
very fair. I will say, you know, I asked Zosher about when it comes to songwriting, what's the most important part to you? Cause for me, it like you said, it's gotta be the chorus, right? He goes, no, it's the first line. He said, it's gotta be the first line because that's the thing that grabs the listener. It's the first thing they hear. And I go, that's a good
point. What's the hook? Yeah.
You know? It changes every song. I don't know.
I don't know if I share that opinion with him. Okay. Well, but I understand the idea that, you know, if you don't have that first line work as an effective hook, it's really hard to bring the person back into the song. I get that.
But to your point, having a chorus that isn't grabbing you
for me. That's a strong word. It's not that it killed it, but that's what makes Pilot a more challenging listen than I would like it to be.
But you also have a dog, Paul.
Lord.
I've always liked that song. I know it's not the greatest song, but it always makes me feel happy inside. Anyways, the third track from Dark Matter is a song called Wreckage.
Yes, it is. So Wreckage is a beautiful tune in the style of Tom Petty. And that ending is elevated. It's triumphant. And what's interesting, I think, is what you talked about, how Eddie claimed that the lyrics were about Trump being desperate and out there playing victim. He says, let's not be driven apart by one person, especially not a person without any worthy causes. He has, as you mentioned, kind of walked that back since, you know, which I think is healthy for the song. I think that when we ground a song, you know, in a way that references a singular figure in history, it's very difficult, I think, for that song to maintain staying power. You know what I mean? I mean, there's some albums like, you know, Marvin Gaye, What's Going On? I mean, there's a timelessness to it because it references something that is so human when you look at the Vietnam War. But I think when you start referencing specific figures in history, it makes it more challenging. I mean, there are Beatles songs that do that where they're literally like naming prime ministers. And I think that they're time capsule songs in a lot of ways, you know, but if you haven't studied that history, it's hard for you to connect and relate to that. You know what I mean? So I think Eddie was wise to kind of walk that back a little bit. And I'm not so sure, you know, I almost wonder if, you know, he wrote the song and then he saw a way for the song to be applied to what he was thinking at the time. And so he's like, yeah, you know, it's kind of like this. And then realized, well, wait a minute. Everyone's going to think that was the origin of the song. And when in fact, maybe it was or maybe it wasn't. I don't know. But I'm glad.
That was an English newspaper interview. So yeah,
that's what
he
I mean.
Was up
like,
really early.
Was
like
it a platform
that he was quite awake yet?
I don't know. Anyway, standout lines from this song. The game of winner takes all, and all means nothing left. Spoils go to the victor, and the other left for dead. I think that such a binary view of life means we all lose. And that's because growth and fulfillment ultimately come through compromise. It comes through sacrifice. It comes through being a person for others. So when you have that mentality, it really becomes a sinkhole for everyone. And I think that when you look at American politics, and I'm not going to go on a diatribe on this, but that there is such a binary construct that we've built for ourselves when it comes to that. And there's the middle ground has become a sinkhole, you know, and any time that you attempt to bridge that gap, you get sucked into that. And so therefore, what do? You cling to whichever polar opposite you happen to identify with for dear life, because you are afraid that, you know, there's no coming back from the middle. and that there's no light there either, when in fact I think that that's where the bridge needs to be built. The mistakes we all make and perfectly repeat, chains are made by DNA refusing to release. I love that line, mostly because I think we get hardwired into these patterns of behavior, and our beliefs and our positions are too often predetermined at birth by our environment. And those things, I think those should be encouraging us to start thinking for ourselves. You know what I mean? So when we fall into that pattern, those hardwired patterns of behavior, and our beliefs and our positions are too often predetermined at birth by that environment and those that should be encouraging us to think for ourselves, it makes it that much more paramount to do so. Much like scared of fear, I think there's a macro and a micro view here. I say that because the micro view is kind of the aftermath of what fell apart in the opening salvo. So all we can really do is kind of comb and crawl through this wreckage. But the hopeful sound of the music, I think, to me, offers promise of a better way forward. I think it's a gorgeous song. It really is. I think it's one of the standout tracks on the record. I think the guitar playing is exceptional. It's got a fantastic chorus. I love the layered vocals in the song. Yeah. And it's one that's going to play well live. It's really going to play well live. Beautiful song. So for me, I gave it a 4, but it's tempting to push it into that 4.5. It really is. There's not much about this song that I would ever want to see changed.
All right. First softer track on the album, Andrew Watt said to Spin how this one came about with Ed, as Andrew was playing a Telecaster that Keith Richards played on Hackney Diamonds, which Andrew produced. And as is Keith's style, it was tuned to open G. And so they just
stumbled upon this little jingle. And you hear that G. Got a happy, major chord feel to it.
This main jangle is that guitar that Keith played, literally. So expect to see a guitar used by Ed or whoever for this tune that you don't usually see. Or it could be actually Mike, whatever guitar he uses for Given to Fly. He might play this because that's also an open G. Just for all the guitar nerds out there, look out for that when you go see the live shows. Anywho, beautiful piano and acoustic guitar playing that kind of fill in the space left by that Telecaster line. Yeah. Now, as you mentioned, everyone's going to talk about how this song is another Tom Petty emulation. And it's true, especially the outro, which I'll get to. Mm. But goddamn, if this is not a great emulation, you know? I mean, it's better than Long Way, in my opinion. And that song featured an actual friggin' heartbreaker, Paul, and Ben Montench on the keys. Yeah. So
I mean that was a Tom Petty lost dogs in a lot of ways.
Yeah. So you've got like the piano and the background guitars, they really start to come to the fore when we hit that pre-chorus. So we're building here, and it's apparent at this point that we're in the midst of a stone cold classic, a la like an elderly woman at this point. It's building. We can see it happening.
Sure is.
Now, here's a trick I'm guessing Andrew suggested. Don't let the first pre-chorus build into the chorus. Let it stay unresolved and go back to the main riff. Hit verse 2 and leave the listener in some sort of like musical Kama Sutra. So well done, Mr. Watt, for that. Now, the second pre-chorus, we get that vocal layering. So he's anteing up the tension a little bit more. Another smart pop element here from Mr. Watt. And again, after the second pre-chorus, we're left wanting again as the song kind of downshifts into the bridge. Now, I'm imagining at this point that I'm hiking, you know, in some beautiful forest, and there's a clearing, and you can kind of see that you're on top of some bluff, and the valley out there is spectacular. If I can quote Seinfeld, spectacular. But you've got to go down the cliffside to get to that beauty. That's this bridge, right? So it's basically like a chorus before we get a proper chorus, which just happens to be the outro, if you follow my jive. It's a very interesting arrangement from Andrew. Anyway, Ed's harmonized vocals, they elevate us into this beauty that is Mike's guitar solo, which has a lot of down elements to it. You know, it's uplifting, it's bright, it's airy, it's poppy. And then you get the final pre-chorus. If that sort of morphed into a proper chorus, because now we're getting those 100% Tom Petty style backing vocals, which I'm a sucker for. I think most of us are. And the outro starts down closer to where the bridge was, but slowly elevates back up. Like we've walked up that final hill to see the sunset. We've been hiking, you know, 3 hours to see. It's everything we thought it'd be, Paul. Combing through the wreckage, repeated on and on and on, proper old school outro, you know. This one's going to be fun. Real fun to see all the guys singing as Ed's kind of riffing on top of it, you know. Almost like a rearview mirror, but like way poppier. And as Ed mentioned, you know, he was asked about this being about Trump, like you said. I don't think it is. I don't think it is. And I think when tragedy befalls us, we look for explanations. You know, we look for answers as to why something like this could happen. We're just human, after all. And this song feels perfectly situated after the first two because in both cases, we need to find a sense of calm, a sense of home. You know, we need a sense that everything is going to be all right. And Ed even says so way more directly in Setting Sun way later in the record, which we'll touch on next episode. Now, I especially love these lines. If you're feeling the leaving, I can't make you stay. I've only ever wanted for it to not be this way. But you're now like the water, and the water will find its way.
Very, very Bruce Lee.
Come on.
Be like water.
Ugh.
Right?
So good.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes we need to let those we care about respond how they're going to respond and how they're going to process conflict and or loss how they need to. And all we can do is just be for them on the other side. Be there for them, you know? I guess my only real critique of this one is that maybe it repeats one or two times too many at the end.
It does draw on a little bit. Yeah. He'd probably shave an extra 15, 20 seconds off, I suppose.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's five minutes long. Maybe like 440. So I'm giving it a 4.5 because, Jesus, it's just that good.
All right. I think we are in alignment with our thinking on this one.
Yeah, I think we're pretty close.
Instant classic.
Yes. Well, here we are at the title track, Dark Matter. It was the first single.
Dark Matter. Mike's rolling drum beat segues into
Matt.
I'm sorry, Matt. Pardon, Matt's rolling drum beat.
If Mike was in the drums, I think it would be probably a terrible crazy song.
Well, I don't know. Matt's rolling drum beat.
I've never
heard
him play drums, so who knows?
Neither have I. Eddie, though, you know, a little Citizen Dick action. Matt's rolling drum beat segues into Mike's stomping, headbanging guitar riff beautifully. And those fuzzy, harmonized rhythms, the high production value. I mean, it's definitely a song that screams Watt Productions. You know what I mean? And I thought that it was a shining example of that production value. And when it was first released, it very quickly signaled, this is not going to sound like any other Pearl Jam record you've ever heard. And I was on board for that. Very on board for that. The pre-chorus to me, it sounds a lot like a Soundgarden song. It really does. And I think that's what I really like about it. You know, it's there's a heavy Matt influence on this song. Now Dark Matter, and we've talked about this before, you know, Dark Matter neither emits nor absorbs light, but it makes up more than I think 80% of the material universe. So you hear when you listen to this song, kind of shades of old Pearl Jam songs like Alone and Brother, just in terms of like that staccato guitar, you know, crunch. I think it's a precursor though to another singles era sounding track that will appear later on this record, which we'll get to next time we examine side B. I think a lot has already been said about this song, so I don't want to retread all of it. But the commentary in the song on injustice is as thick as Jeff's bass. Okay. And I think the cosmic analogy gives rise to this idea that while dark matter may compromise the majority of the material universe, our best interests and intentions have become increasingly immaterial and infinitesimally small on this infinitesimally small, I should say, earthly plane where they should matter most. You know what I mean?
Wow.
So I think that I've had more time with this song than any other song for obvious reasons. Right. It was the first single that was released. So I've had a lot of time to sit and kind of let my thoughts sink in with this one. And that's kind of where I landed with it. You know, this idea that while dark matter ultimately may compromise the majority of the material universe, it's our best interest, our good intentions, the things that matter to us that we value, you know, those things have become so increasingly marginalized and increasingly immaterial on this tiny little earthly plane that we live on, when in fact they should matter most. And I think that's the what's been a lasting impression for me the more I listen to the song. So I would give it a 4. I think it's more than just a good song. I think it's a great song. I wouldn't put it in my top 25 necessarily, but I think it's a hell of a song.
Yeah. You know, when a song centers around Matt Cameron and Jeff is playing his 12 string bass, you can count me in, my friend. You can count me in for that. You know, the moment I heard this back in February, I knew I was going to like it. It's meaty. It's heavy. It has many hallmarks of a classically good heavy Pearl Jam song, including a
absolutely
Jimmy Page style descending riff, you know, from Stone in that pre-chorus.
Yeah.
It's got a pissed off snarky Ed, and it's got a face melting mic solo. So what, I mean, there you go. Boom. What brings this song down score-wise, though, is what makes it really fun, and that's the studio tricks and guitar effects. The ping-pong digital tremolo stuff that we're hearing here that reminds us of UR in many ways,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's the way that I love to hear Pearl Jam incorporate some of those electronic-style things into their rock and roll.
Okay.
But because the rest of the music is so simple, it feels like both the star on top of a Christmas tree and a crutch at the same time. The bridge is also fun, but it's a bit simplistic musically. Maybe some fun overdubs underneath would have helped. I'm not really sure. I mean, it's not bad by any means. It's just not terribly unique for a band full of incredibly adept players. Now, the biggest strength of this song, though, for me is gotta be Ed's lyrics. And you alluded to that a little bit there.
As Stone I mentioned, loves it.
Yes, he does.
He says it's one of his favorite songs. And he said that about the end when Backspacer came out. Usually when Stone's like, I really like this song. I mean, it's a good one.
I love, like I said, I love a snarky, angry Ed. I think a lot of us do. You know, you got lines like denounce the demagogues, King Diamond to discard. What a line.
Yeah.
Just, I love that. That wordplay.
The symbolism.
And then he does this thing. Yeah. He does this thing in the second chorus where he kind of changes one word, you know, in this instance, it's demagogues to demigods. Another great word. It's a trick he uses all the time. I mean, if you think about ignore and endure from Dance of the Clairvoyants, chains, change from Corduroy, and many, many others. Now, we do live in very strange times. It feels like it's getting stranger, maybe more dangerous. Listen, Ed commands us to deploy the dialogue, your word against the law. But what happens when the law is perverted? It just makes me feel more negative. Listen, it's a very, very solid, fun track, but it's not deep enough to be a classic for me. I'm being very, very harsh here because I really do enjoy the song. I'm giving it a 3.5, which for me is...
3.5, wow.
It's damn good, but could there be something else happening? Just a little bit more. So 3.5. And I really do enjoy it. So you can see how harsh I'm being. I'm nitpicking.
Interesting. Okay.
Yes.
I can get behind that, though. I can see why you would land there, though,
because I'm like a 3.75, but I can't do that. That's too much. Too many fractions.
Yeah.
All right. So we're at the last track of side A. We're at the song Won't Tell.
Oh boy. Did we actually save the best for last, Jason?
I don't know.
Did we actually save the best for last? Won't Tell. It's this melodic pop rocker. And, you know, when Pearl Jam does these, whether it's Better Man or I don't want to put Just Breathe in there because I think that's more of a folksy ballad, but I think they really nail songs like this. You know, it's that mid-tempo song. It definitely presents, I think, is the most radio-friendly tune on the record thus far, arguably at all, while still being very much... Maybe, I don't know. It's shorter, you know. I think it's the most radio-friendly tune on the record, and it's still mature, though, in its composition and its performance. And I think that speaks volumes about where the band is, not only in their career, but who they are as musicians. You really, really hear the Cure in the guitar work. And I think that's super cool. It's anthemic. You know, it has this soaring chorus. It has a massive ending. It's U2 big. It really is in a lot of ways. And Pearl Jam doesn't usually go there, but when they do, they nail it here. You know, Stone actually said, you know, we referenced The Cure a lot while making this record because of them and their style. They teach you the power of the simplest little melody that has a unique lyrical quality, and it feels like it has a voice. If it feels like it has a lyric almost, and certain melodies, the way they lay over the riff, they sing, and finding those things is like magic. And I think this song is magic. I really do. I think it's one of those songs that it's either going to hit big or it's going to be like, you know, one of those grossly underrated songs that we literally cite in the catalog as like sad. You know, it's like, how is that song not just iconically beloved or I mean, obviously this made it onto a record, so I can't compare it to, you know, some of the songs that were left off, you know what I mean? Or songs that were, you know, cast aside as B-sides. But when you really unpack this song, and you look at the lyrics, these themes of vulnerability and, you know, guarded secrecy and the emotional growth that we see from the speaker, you get this picture being painted. It's similar in some ways to the narrative that we see being built in a song like Alone, or even Johnny Guitar. You know, some of the songs in the catalog where Eddie kind of paints this picture of a man and a woman and this very nuanced relationship. And you're watching this unfold, and there are kind of very, very deep connection that's really unspoken, but at the same time, it's also transparent. You know what I mean? It's not so cloaked in ways that are abstract like a lot of Jeff's lyrics are. So this scene's unfolding. You got this presumably a woman. You know, he says she, and it's very intimate and it's immediate. And she picks this book off the shelf, and it's not a dramatic action, right? And she references something, and she starts singing in this minor chord in a key he's never heard before. And he you know what I mean. And she gives him that sly little, you know, Mona Lisa smile, if you will. And it's suggestive. And there's this shared understanding, you know what I mean? And I think that when you get the chorus coming back in later on, he references this yearning, you know what I mean? But it's a yearning he's not supposed to have. And I can't help but think of like unrequited love or something that is, restrictive or banned or forbidden. This idea that, you know, you want to be with this person, you have this connection, and there's this pool, this gravitational pool, this black hole, if you will, that you're getting sucked into, but there are all of these obstacles, and you recognize that you really shouldn't continue to move in this direction. And he asks, it's a question I'm still wrapping my head around. Like, can you heal? Can you feel? Right? That's how the song ends. And this is repeated quite often. Is he talking to himself? You know, can I heal? Is that something that she is saying to him? Can you heal? Can you feel? Is it a call and response? You know, can you heal? And him saying, can you feel? There's a lot of ambiguity there. And I appreciate that because it's an ambiguous moment. And that's, I think, what adds to what feels like a cognitive overload as you're trying to like really, really work with this song. But, you know, there's this, you know, this cold confession to reference a prior Pearl Jam song. There's this thing, you know what I mean? And he is having difficulty holding onto that himself. And there's a line in there, won't tell a soul, you know what I mean? And you're trying to figure out how to proceed. And it's so layered. And it's complicated and it's messy. And you're battling with yourself. You're battling with your desire, and you're battling with what feels like a natural connection that you should be allowed to pursue with without fear for of retribution or wrongdoing or you know, misfortune. And yet at the same time, you can't, you know, and I think it's the desire to change and the desire to be embraced and to be accepted. And it's not transactional, mind you, like I'm not referencing it in that way, but it is conditional. You know what I mean? And, and so you're just kind of left in this place of unfulfillment. But it's very different than a song like Of the Girl, where it's, you know, a lack of initiative of, if you will, like you're not really, you know, there's this escape. It's almost like you're chasing after something. This is different because I feel like it's two things converging together, but they can't get too close lest they implode. And I think for me, that's the charge of this song. And the music, like I said, there's that big, you know, Cure guitar and that big epic U2 sound to it. And it, this is going to sound awesome in an open air stadium. It really is. When we hear this song live, I think people are going to, you know, it's going to be one of those songs that sounds great on a record. But then when you hear it live, you're going to be like, holy, that's this blew my face off. That's amazing.
So what are we going with this score wise?
I have it as a 4.5 right now. I'm a big fan. I think a 4 is probably a safer grade. Maybe over time it settles in a little bit at a 4. But I'm a big fan.
This is going to be our first major disagreement.
Whoa, fascinating. I can't wait to hear this. It's a polarizing song, I'm finding. And I don't know why.
Yes. And as you were explaining your analysis of the story being told,
how are you not realizing caught in that little dance between them? And you're just watching this and it's like, well, if this was a scene in a show or a movie, you wouldn't be able to take your eyes off of it. It's magnetic. You would not be able to look away, you know, because it's there's a seductiveness to it. But the feelings are so elevated that, and the song captures that.
I love your passion for this. I don't get most of it. Okay. You mentioned the word ambiguity.
All you had to do was say, Paul, you know, is this a sleight of hand thing again? Is this what you're doing?
No, sleight of hand's problem for me is the music.
Again, we beg to differ.
Where the hell are we going? Anyways, this is not a review of sleight of hand.
No.
You mentioned ambiguity, and I tend to struggle with songs that are too ambiguous. Okay, musically speaking, let's just pull back a little bit. Musically speaking, it's a pretty basic intro verse section here. Mm-hmm. Kind of cowboy chord pattern, mid-tempo. Seems like Mike and Stone are kind of playing the same thing, more or less. Jeff's bass line is lovely. I'll give him that. And it does kind of propel things forward. It sounds, and I think you kind of talked about this a little bit, it sounds like the song was always built around the chorus. Like, they want this thing to be built like it was, like a Given to Fly style chorus the crowd's going to adore. And it might be that, but it might not be that. And it does have these soaring vocals, and it has kind of jangly U2 style guitars that kind of fill out the musical spectrum. And Ed sounds really great in this register. I will say that for sure.
He does. His voice is outstanding here.
Yeah, 100%. I think there's definitely some synth action happening in the background. So watch for Josh when this song is played live. Yeah. I think I'm hearing a tambourine in the chorus as well, but you know, who knows? The bridge feels like something we might have heard from Backspacer, and I don't mean that in a bad way necessarily.
It does have it feels like a song that could have maybe been like on Backspacer.
Yeah, like an unthought known thing, mm-hmm. maybe a little bit.
Amongst the Waves, you know, there's...
Like, I like it, but it's also a bit unremarkable to me. Like, I've already heard this before. It
feels like Unthought Known and Amongst the Waves finally realized and actualized and in a more complete comp. I don't know. I'm going to stop interrupting you. Go ahead.
I want to get there. It does undulate. It does twist and turn, and it builds nicely to the outro. And this is the real hero of the song. You know, you got your chimey guitars, and working in tandem with the synths really brightens up this whole outro. But, and you went on all about the story being told here. And I love that you love that. But it confuses me. You know, I enjoy a story where we're focused on the actions of a female battling with her agency. You got Wash, you got Dissident, you got Elderly Woman, you got Why Go. So many great examples in the catalog. Is Ed singing from the point of view of someone who's trying to convince the one they're longing for that they've changed? Is that part of it? You know, at first she's opening a book and then she's playing a song. I feel like we're missing a couple lines in between there. Like, how did she go from the song to all of a sudden she's playing a chord? Like, can you answer that for me?
So, and I've referenced this on this show before, okay? There was a series of films by Richard Linklater called Before Sunrise, and I think it was Before Sunset.
Oh, it was like a trilogy, right? Yeah, yeah.
It was a trilogy, yeah. So, I don't want to ruin any of these films, but there is a moment.
Well, how long have they been out? 25 years? 30 years?
Well, I mean, Before Sunrise, I think it was sometime in the 90s, Before Sunset.
Spoiler alert.
Was 2004, but at the end of the if you the next time you watch the end of Before Sunset, if you ever watch this film, 2004, Before Sunset, okay. Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy, the way this film ends is this song. Like when you she puts on I think a jazz record or something like that, and she's kind of dancing to it at the time. But the feelings and the synergy and the space between these two characters. And their desire to close that space. That is what that's this song right here. And to me, that moment is infectious. And it's alive, man. It's so charged. I don't know what to tell
is
you.
It
it's
like, is it alive?
Absolutely. It is, because there's so much feeling in the passive inaction. And that I think is what's like to it's easy to, you know, react, respond, right? It's easy to feel and to just react, to withhold, to not be able to act and feel this level of intensity and not know if you can or even should move forward. What does that sound like? You know what I mean? And I think so often songs try to capture it in such a you know, D minor way or E minor way, I should say. And I feel like this song does the opposite of that. You know what I mean? It captures the beauty of that, of life that's in that moment. And now what you do with it next ultimately dictates a whole different trajectory. Right. But anyway,
I'm failing. This is a failure of me. I am failing to get all of that from this, because for me, it's a disjointed verse to second verse. And then in this bridge, she comes to him in this dream and says, "Stop pining over me. It's not going to happen." So Ed sings that the subject won't tell a soul. Like, is he saying he won't admit that he's longing for anyone? Is that embarrassing or something? Like,
I read it like he's not supposed to. And maybe it's because that trilogy, like, I know that narrative so well that I see those characters maybe in this scene, and a lot of the characters' stories are if Ed said on record that I watched these three films and the song's about the second one, it would make total sense to me, because that this idea mm-hmm. that, you know, what you want, I mean, is it her coming to him in a dream? You know what I mean? Or is it, you know, is it a dreamy moment? I don't know, but I feel as though he wants to be with her, and he is acknowledging that he shouldn't be or isn't supposed to be. But at the same time, he's questioning the validity of that barrier. And therein lies the conflict, because is it now a threshold you're willing to cross? And it becomes like cost-benefit analysis. You know what I mean? Like you're asking yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? So it's.
Listen, your explanation of this is, for me, is more satisfying than the actual song.
It sounds like a Stip review,
That is a Stip review
of River Cross.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. And we haven't read Stip's review yet, by the way, and you should read it. It's on skyscraper.com right now. Go check that out. when you're telling me as the listener, I have to do what feels like more work than you are putting into the lyrics to understand what the fuck is going on.
They're there. I don't like that. I mean, it's to me, it's there. It's I'm reading them at face value. It's not like I'm missing chapters between the lines.
I feel like I'm missing chapters.
Okay.
And then it's like, oh, the song is over. And because musically it's not as interesting. And it's funny you mentioned The Cure because I don't like The Cure. So when you mentioned how it's very Cure, it's like, oh, that's why I don't like it. Because it's just like, it feels very basic to me. It's like, all right, here's a couple of chords. Listen, I don't hate the song. It's or not
the
7
cult,
o'clock.
Maybe The Cure, The Cult. I don't know. I mean, maybe you get that out of it. It's
eh. The Cult's fine. But yeah, fine. So for me, it's a 2.5. Sorry.
Ouch. That I love this. I love how I was willing to consider pushing it to 4.5. And you're like, I will concede it 2.5 on a good day.
I think in time, if I apply your analysis, which is probably, you know, apt to this on multiple listens, and who knows what happens in the live setting if we hear it in, you know, Los Angeles or I hear it somewhere else, maybe it changes, you know, maybe the crowds will get into it and everything gets elevated and the outro gets extended. I don't know, whatever. It goes up. But right now, my reaction when I was going through this, I was like, I feel like this is the weakest song on the record. I feel like this is kind of like the last song that made it on, like the, hey, we got this 3-chord progression, first chorus, bridge, outro. Okay. Great.
For a band that writes songs like Unthought Known, which doesn't really have a traditional chorus at all, if you will,
yes,
and Of the Girl, which is, I mean, these are songs that if they actually had a chorus would be, you know, Won't Tell probably. I mean, Of the Girl would not, but I mean,
right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's the absence of that that made them Pearl Jam. It was like, well, we could put a chorus, but then it'll be a radio song, so we're not going to do that. It's, I don't know.
Maybe it's the more, you know, radio-friendly version of what those things were trying to be. I'm not trying to be, but I
like both of those songs too. I'm huge fans of them. You know, Unthought Known might be my favorite song off that record, but I don't know. I think you and I are on divergent paths when it comes to this. We shall see in time if we converge. Like, hey, you came around on Dance of the Clairvoyants. You came around on Dance of the Clairvoyants.
I did. That was for, well, and if you don't know what Paul's talking about, go listen to episode 4 when we analyzed Dark Matter. Gigaton. That's the end of side A. We've got 6 songs to do on side B. Real quick, because we're at over an hour here. Paul, biggest takeaway from side A?
Biggest takeaway for me was that this was a level of production that we had not heard from them before. It felt very produced, but at the same time organic. And it felt like they came into the studio. I think Mike or Stone mentioned something in an interview about how they had like a box of their favorite music, and they were able to integrate that into the songwriting and the playing in ways that felt like it was there, but not so on the nose. And I got that feeling. But how do you produce a record that feels this produced, and yet at the same time organic enough where you can very easily see this playing live? Let's see all these songs played live. Like, I mean, Stitt made this comment in the listening party. Like, it's live. It's like ready made for live play.
Every song.
Every song. And so to me, I mean, that's the special gravitas of this record, is that it can sound this polished, and at the same time, every one of these songs you could easily hear being a smash on stage.
I don't know if y'all are listening or watching, have seen the clips of the guys on Howard Stern's show last week, but they released the video clips, and they played 2 new songs, Running and Scared of Fear, and they sound great. So be excited for that. My biggest takeaway from the first half of this album, or the side A of this album, is that I think I gotta think about it a little bit more, but I think this might be the strongest 3 songs to start an album since Verses for me, and I'm not kidding.
I don't think react and respond for me is strong enough to say that, but I will
say that's why it's my take.
It is your take. Yeah, I know. But, you know, I've mastered the art of telling you your take is wrong. So I'm kidding.
You're probably right about Won't Tell. I'll have to get there.
No, I'm
but listen to me.
Often so wrong. Think about this. Usually wrong.
Think about, no, stop. Think about no code. Who you are is lovely, but I like these songs better. No Way is great. I like these songs better. Evacuation, we know. Avocado starts quite strong, but I don't think Comatose is as good as any of these. You got Vitalogy is what? It's Last Exit, Spin the Black Circle.
What's not third? For you.
Not for you. I mean, Spin the Black Circle is fun. It's a lot of fun, but is it as strong as these songs? I don't think so. I honestly think as a cumulative score, if I was to go back and give a 0 through 5, whatever, on all those songs, I bet you this is as strong as, or closest to the number of
since Versus. I'll give you that. And that was a long time ago. Whether you go Versus or Vitalogy, we're talking, you know, first three albums. So I'll give you that. I'll give you that. That's
so. I think. And sure, fair an point. Argument can be made for Vitality.
It sounded.
I can understand.
I gave you this incredulous look, like you sounded like you were being hyperbolic. But now that I think about it, you have a point. Might be.
But, I mean, clearly Lightning Bolt, clearly Backspacer, Avocado. I'm pretty sure. Riot Act for sure. Binaural, and I love Binaural, but like Evacuations, yeah. Yield. Very strong, but is No Way better than these songs? I don't think so.
Well, here, let me one up you on this one. Or let me add on, piggyback off of you please. On this one. Huh? If we're in agreement, then no. If we're in agreement that the first three songs are arguably the best opening salvo, if you will, to an album since either Versus or Vitalogy, mm-hmm. I would argue that the stretch from track 3, which is records through, I want to say 7, which I believe is Waiting for Stevie, there's the whole middle portion of the record is impeccably strong. Like there's no weak point in it.
You've got to get over the hump on Won't Tell. But other than that, I would be like, yeah, right. Pretty fucking good.
And it's a hell of a stretch.
Next time around, gang, we kick it off with Upper Hand and then Waiting for Stevie. And yeah, I mean, listen, the back half of the record is good. Let's just say it's good. I think we'll have some strong numbers for that episode next week. So tune in for Side B and we'll give our complete grade as well. Thank you for being here. If you have enjoyed this, please go ahead and, you know, like this video, subscribe to the channel, hit the bell for notifications. If you are a YouTube watcher, if you are an old school podcaster, Paul, what should they do?
Nah, they should just feed that algorithm, rate it, review it. Subscribe if you're not already, you know, do that thing that you do.
Oh, great movie.
Yeah.
That's a good one. If you do want to go ahead and feed the algorithm, you will be entered into winning possibly a Mojo magazine, a Dark Matter Slipknot, and Slipknot. I can't give you Slipknot, but I can give you Slipmat. Paul, I gave myself a home pour of wine this evening in celebration of this, and so maybe it's getting
excellent.
Kicking a little bit. And a Dark Matter in stores now. Post, are you out of your sky? Yeah. I lifted up, but my props are all buried under this, the Dark Matter vinyl that we're going to give to our April patron. So if you want to join Patreon, we've got a bunch of really cool stuff for you to listen to and watch that goes beyond what you get for free on this platform or wherever else you could possibly listen to / watch us. But this month's giveaway, crystal clear vinyl of Dark Matter.
It's a beaut, Clark.
It's a beaut. Oh, I love saying that. Thank you. And, t-shirts, like I said, 3 designs on your screen right now. They're glorious. So, you know, if you want. But if you don't want, hey, you're here. You're here right now. This is fabulous. We thank you from the bottom of our hearts for watching / listening to us. And we hope that you enjoy the conversation in the comments below, wherever you're listening to us. And yeah, back next week, Paul, with Side B. I am so excited. It's Stip's favorite song in probably 35 years coming up on that record, on that side of the record.
It's going to be fun talking about that one, isn't it?
And our friend Ryan Lent, just as we're recording this, posted his breakdown of how that song was played today. And I got to tell you, as he was playing along to some of the parts, I was singing the song to myself because that's how effing good it is. And we'll talk about how effing good it is next week on this program, and we'll see you there. And until we do, you've been listening to / watching
The State of Love and Trust.